Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock and it's time for a Talk Magic. Now this week I have on the channel somebody who you've never heard of. I've got to know this gentleman very well over the last 6 months, and his story in magic is so inspirational. I speak to so many people on this channel and they're new into magic, or they're hobbyists and they want to know how to make their way through and become professionals and going out and doing gigs. This gentleman that I have with me today, I have over the last 6 months grown to consider him a friend. He is an incredible magician. He is an incredible performer. He thinks so much about magic, and his journey through magic is incredible. I think he's one of the best magicians I've met. He's based over in Hong Kong. Nobody will have ever heard of him, and I'm really hoping that this interview changes that, because he has so much experience and so much knowledge, and I know that this interview is going to be fantastic. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Bernard Marino. How are you doing, Bernard? You okay, mate?
I'm doing perfectly fine. It's 7:15 a.m. in the morning in Hong Kong.
Wow, nice and early. And I've got to tell everyone, just before I start this interview, you've just recently come out of hospital having a surgery, and
yeah.
I asked you if you wanted to put the interview off and you said no. I mean, that just tells everybody the type of person that you are. So,
well, you know, the show must go on, Craig.
It's the old adage, isn't it? The show must go on. Absolutely. Now, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate that. There's something that I need people to know, because they're not going to believe me when I say it. So I'm going to tell them. You're 60.
Yeah, I am. I hit the big 60 in April.
You don't look it at all, like anywhere close to that age. Like, it's just amazing. You're like well, Peter Pan.
You know, I really do believe that age is a state of mind. You know, my parents lived to quite an advanced age. My dad passed away last year, not COVID related. I guess he just got old, and he was 104 years old. And I remember asking my dad a few years ago when he passed the milestone of 100. And I said, "Dad, what's the secret to longevity?" And he said, "Son, don't let the old man in." And at first I couldn't really understand, because he was like the oldest human being I'd ever seen. But what he meant was not physically, he meant mentally. He meant that the old man's way of thinking, the fact that, oh, it's all over and life has nothing more to live. And so my dad lived each day to the best that he could. And that's the way that I like to live too. And I also believe, Craig, that magic really, really does have this elixir of youth. It just keeps us young. And so long as we retain this childlike wonder and curiosity in the world, then every day is just, it's a blessing to be alive. And also, you got to keep fit. That's an important thing too. What's the old saying? A healthy mind in a healthy body.
Absolutely. Well, half the time we speak, you're either going to the gym or having just come back from the gym. Or
I do have a weird routine. Yeah. But, you know, as I said to you before, we're gifted with only 24 hours in a day, and how we use that time is very much up to us, right? We can sleep it away. We could booze it away. We could do magic 24 hours like you do. Or we can try to strive a balance, you know. The people and the things that are important in our lives, we got to make time for it. And it's up to us. We can't blame the same. We don't have enough time, because time is a great leveler. Right. It's no matter whether you're Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, or a homeless street sleeper, you still are allocated the same amount of time. And it's up to you what you make of that time.
That's very true. That is amazing.
And you know that better than anyone, Craig. You managed to squeeze out 36 hours out of every day. And I don't know how you do it.
I'm not too sure how I do it myself, to be honest, Bernard. But you're 100% correct. Now, I know that there's going to be people that are watching this interview that are going, hang on, who's this guy? And as we get through your story and we find out more about you, I think that there's a lot of people that are going to that know you from a certain thing. We won't talk about that right now. A lot of people are going to know you and they don't even know they know you, but they do.
By 15 minutes of fame.
Absolutely. And I want to get into all of that. But first of all, as I do on every interview, I want to start off by talking about the your origin story. Now, I know how passionate you are about magic. And, you know, you've got a massive collection of magic and tricks and books. And, you know, it rivals me. Your knowledge is just incredible. But where did that all come from? How did you get started in magic?
It was an interesting story. I was an only child, and at least I thought I was before I knew the full extent of my family history. But basically, I grew up as an only child. My dad was a lawyer based in the Philippines, and he didn't live with us. So he would only come back a few times a year on business trips, stay for about a week. And then I used to call him Hurricane Dad. It's like a hurricane hits town, unravels everything, puts everything into turmoil, and then goes away. And then your life slowly settles back. So it's always like that. And my mom worked two jobs, and I was very introverted. Actually, I was very, very shy as a child. I was painfully shy to the fact that when anyone came to visit us, I would hide in the bathroom and lock the door. And that was not very convenient, given that we only had one bathroom in the house, right? But I was very, very shy. And when I was about 8, my mom thought that it was a really serious problem. So she took me to a child doctor, which is actually, a psychologist, psychiatrist. Back in the 60s, I don't know what name they gave them. We just called him a doctor. And he said, basically, what I needed was a hobby that would bring me out of my shell. And the only hobbies I had at that time was reading and stamp collecting, which are not really very interactive hobbies. And so what he did was, he introduced me to magic in a very unique way. He borrowed the wedding ring of my mom, put it in a handkerchief, made it disappear, and asked me to select an orange. And when he cut open the orange, my mom's ring was embedded in that orange. And that to me was mind-blowing. I'd never seen anything like that before. And then he introduced me to the famous, what's that number again? Is it 798.373, the Dewey Decimal System? Where all the magic books are stored in the library, right? This is going to go over the heads of Generation X who are listening to this. Like, what is a library card, right? And then I was introduced to some books of magic. I think they were Bill Severn books, if I remember right. And then a whole new world. I'm going to channel my inner Disney, right? But it was a whole new world. And then my mom bought me my very first book, which I still have to today. And it's Norman Hunter's The Puffin Book of Magic. And my mom and I must have made every single trick in that book, from shoe boxes and from, I remember the appearing wand. I borrowed my mom's purse, cut a hole at the end and slipped the wand through the sleeve, put a few gold coins in there. And I must have done every single trick in that book. And then my aunt, who was living in Canada, sent me this book, which was How to Entertain Children with Magic You Can Do by the great Merlini. That was actually a pseudonym for Clayton Rawson, who actually wrote mystery novels as well. And there was also lots and lots and lots of magic. So these two books, plus the proverbial magic set, I think it was from Mr. Magic, or I can't remember what it was, a magic, and from Tenyo as well. I won the earliest Tenyo magic tricks. And then I started performing in school. And what I found was that magic filled you with confidence, because as you know, if you've prepared well and practiced well, you're always 2 or 3 steps ahead of them. And it gives you kind of any satisfaction that they can never catch you. And then I started to gain a form of, well, not like Rylan, not the notoriety that Rylan has, but I started to get a name as the magic kid in school. And I'd be able to do some shows, like in school talent shows and stuff. And after that, then I think the magic bug bit me and never, ever let go. Wow. That's my background story.
That's amazing. So you're doing magic in school. It's giving you confidence. You're becoming like the magic kid. You're entering competitions and so on and so forth. What was the goal? Was the goal to like go full time as a magician, or did you have other?
Not really. It's interesting. I wanted to be a professional football player, and I was actually very good. I was a very good goalkeeper. I played for Hong Kong schools, and in hockey, I played for Hong Kong under 23 Olympic team. So, but both times, my so-called sports career was cut down by very serious injury. So when I finished form five, I did my O-levels and I didn't want to go on to study anymore. And I actually signed forms to play professional football. But then I had a severe knee injury. And at that time, surgery wasn't that good. The surgical techniques weren't that good. And so they decided against signing me full time. And I had to go back to study my A-levels. And then I went on to university, and then actually 2 weeks before my A-level exams, I was supposed to study law at Bristol U, and I was actually accepted into Bristol University. But 2 weeks before my A-level exams, my dad and mom had this big argument, and my dad walked out, and I didn't see my dad again until I was 30 years old. I was 17 at that time, and my mom said to me, she said, well, you can't go to the UK. We don't have the money. So if you want to study in university, you got to get out and you got to make a living and you got to pay your way through university by yourself. And you got to bring money back home as well to support your family. So it's pretty tough. And so I worked a couple of jobs, and at the same time, I started doing magic. So I did kid shows, and I did some cabaret work. So the pay was really lousy. It was about less than 20 quid. But that was early 80s, right? So it was good income. I worked in the gym as a fitness instructor. I was a waiter in a disco, and I made good money. And so I was working 2-3 jobs and paying my way through university as well. So it took me 6 years to finish university. I dropped out a couple of times because I needed to earn money. And I always tell my students, because I went on to become a full-time teacher, and I always tell my students that sometimes education is not a luxury, it's a necessity. And it's a key that can open many doors in life. And if you don't have that key, you're going to have to push and kick and shove and beg. And if you're lucky, that door will open a crack for you. But if you have education, it's always something to fall back on. And the pandemic showed, because if you remember during COVID, well, a lot of magicians lost their income, and they had to revert to other ways to earn a living. Yeah. They had to become like food delivery people. You know, we have a saying in Chinese that when the horse dies, you got to get off the horse and walk. So if you're used to riding a horse, get off that horse and walk. But basically, teaching has sustained me all the way through. And magic is a very lucrative sideline. It's tax-free. And it enables me to indulge in buying lots of Craig Petty and Wolf Magic products through the years. So that's how I got into magic. It was a way to earn extra living. I bussed. I was probably one of the very early buskers making balloon animals. And I did restaurant magic, anything, any kind of gigs that would be able to sustain my way of living.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's fantastic. Now, I alluded earlier on to something else that you've done that people might be aware of, and that actually has links to magic as well. Yeah. Was this during when you were at uni? Was yeah. this you were on? Can you talk about that? And
I can literally say I've been there, done that, and got the t-shirt. Literally, but I didn't wear the t-shirt today. Well, I was working in gyms as a way to supplement my living. And this was back in 86. And some talent scouts came around the gyms looking for actors to play particular roles in this new film that was going to be shot in Hong Kong, a Hollywood film, starring at that time a totally unknown Belgian actor with an accent probably worse than Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is really saying something. Arnold Schwarzenegger sounded like Shakespeare next to this young man, but his name was Jean-Claude Van Damme. that eventually went on to be known by the initials JCVD. Unfortunate lost two initials, though. But Jean-Claude Van Damme decided to shoot his very first film, and he actually invested $5 million US dollars of his money into this film. And it was based loosely on the biography of a fighter whose name was Frank Dux, D-U-X. And the movie has been given two credits, one of them, which I'm very proud of, and one that has a dubious quality to it. The first one is that Bloodsport, the name of the movie is called Bloodsport. And it is credited with the rise of what was to become mixed martial arts, because in the film, there was a plethora of different fighting techniques being shown throughout. It was about a tournament, a secret tournament held in Hong Kong. Part fact, part fiction. And then it's also being credited as being Donald Trump's favorite movie. So I don't really know what to think about that. But basically, I was recruited to play a part as a Syrian fighter that went by the name of Sadiq Hussein, known as Hussein. And his favorite phrase, he had a gold tooth, and his favorite phrase was, "Now I show you a trick or two, you're an American asshole." Yeah. Right. So that, yeah, I'm sorry about that. You have to edit that. But basically, I was a fighter. I was in three scenes, actually. And it was actually just a throwaway part, but a few interesting things happened along the way. So maybe you'd like to know about those as well.
Yes, please.
Okay, well, one of them was the fight scene in which I was knocked out by the actor Jean-Claude Van Damme. And it looked like your typical Hollywood fake blood, because there was blood on the canvas as I lay on the floor knocked out by this man, Jean-Claude. We choreographed the scene, but Jean-Claude moved a bit too fast, and I couldn't move my chin away as he landed his elbow punch, and it actually connected, split my lip. I passed out. I was unconscious, and I was taken to a nearby hospital, stitched up with 7 stitches, which I still have today, and brought back to lie on the canvas. So otherwise it would be weird. It would be like an alien movie where the elbow punch, you know, knocked me out of the universe. So I had to come back and lie there and be dragged off. So the whole scene was edited. So it was a continuous shot. But the funny thing was that the blood on the canvas is actually my blood. And here's the kicker, Craig. I was watching the premiere of this show, of the movie. It didn't have a huge release, right? It kind of became a cult movie that was picked up on VHS, and, you know, it became an underground classic. But when it was actually released about a year after all the editing and everything, it was shot and shown in a few cinemas in Hong Kong, including a cinema that was famous for showing soft porn movies. Go figure. So anyway, I'm sitting there in dark sunglasses with my mate because we didn't want to be recognized, right? And then there were these two guys in front of us. And as my scene came on, one guy said, "Oh, it's just this fake blood. They're biting on a capsule and it's this fake blood, or they're using ketchup." And I just tapped him on the back and I said, "Excuse me, bro, that is real blood." And then he kind of stopped, looked at me, looked at the image on the screen, did a double take because he realized that I was the person on the screen. And, you know, he handed me, at that time, there were ticket stubs, right? You know, we had physical ticket stubs. And he asked me to sign my name as an autograph there, which is, I think, quite funny. Yeah. So that was one thing. And another thing, it was very interesting. This is where the magic element came in. If any of you have ever seen the film, or can't remember it because we're going back like 26 years or something then, but you can get it on iTunes, and I'm not going to plug the film, and you can get the clips on YouTube. But basically there's a scene that is taken from a Bruce Lee, who is, you know, the epitome of martial arts, right? Everyone knows Bruce Lee. And there's this scene where Bruce Lee is demonstrating this, the quickness of the hand, and like he put a pebble in his hand, in his palm, and the challenge was to snatch the pebble before he could close his hand, right? So he was demonstrating that he could close his hand faster than you could snatch the pebble, right? And then they wanted to recreate that scene with a coin. So the original idea was that there would be a like a brass coin, this is a Hong Kong coin, placed into the palm of Jean-Claude Van Damme, the protagonist of the film, Frank Dux. And then I was the villain, and it was shot in a bar, and I was supposed to snatch the coin from his hand before he could close his hand, right? And the original idea was that, the coin was in my hand. The coin was in my hand, and he had to snatch it before, faster than I could close my fist. And in the film, I'm thinking about it now. In the film, I need to, he asked me, I think that I've won because I can still feel the coin in my hand. But when I opened my hand, it wasn't a brass coin. It was actually a silver coin. So for somehow Jean-Claude the actor was able to switch the coin. And original way to do it was just a camera cut. So like they put the coin, the brass coin in my hand, and then we switch it for a silver one. We cut away to him and switch it. I said, you don't need to do this. You can actually do it using a magic technique. So what I showed them was that you take the brass coin and then hold it in the hand. And then when you change it, you would change it to the silver coin. I know there's nothing for you, coin boy, but let me just credit Bobo for that move. And I think that's all that needed to be said. So there's a little bit of magic trivia thrown into the film that was never actually credited. It was just my idea suggested to the director. So anyway, that was my claim to fame. I was involved in this film that at the time didn't seem like a lot. It was a way to make extra living. I think it was £100 a day. And I shot for about 7 days, and then they compensated me for the actual injury. I got like per stitch, I can't remember how much money. It was a lot of money at that time, I remember, in the 80s, but it grew to become a classic. And even to now, some people, when they see me or they see me on YouTube, they say, you're the guy from Bloodsport. And basically I never went on to make any other films. I had no aspirations to do that. But it's just funny how that's kind of endeared to today.
That's crazy. And it is crazy that you did all of that and then you decided, you know what, I don't want to do any other films, because people spend, you know, actors will spend a big part of their life just desperate to make a break in a film like that. And there's you kind of getting straight in there with that part and then going, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, I did have a couple of offers to do a few more other films, but then, you know, my focus at that time was to complete university, to become a teacher. That's all I wanted to do, actually, and that's all I've done until now. And so magic's always been a part of my life, but it hasn't consumed my life. And I think that's how I've been able to remain sane and remain happy. I think that I'm not saying that someone who's 24/7 is into magic is not happy. I think that what I just strive for is a balance. And I love magic. I don't think that I'm any less passionate than any full-time entertainer of magic. But it's just that I chose a more stable form of income. And I think that at times where the economy has been rocky, my day job has been able to keep, my standard of living to an acceptable level. And the magic has always been supplementary and fun along the way.
That's great. That's awesome. And, you know, I want to speak to you about performing, because I've got several questions. But the first question is, like you just said there, you made the decision to stay full time. Have a full-time job, something that you're passionate about, and do magic on the side. And just so that people know that are listening to this, but Bernard's very busy. You know, he may do magic on the side, but you know, he could, you know, he's got lots of shows and lots of different things that he's got going on. I get questions on this channel all the time from people that are wanting to become, that are wanting to get paid for magic, and they ask the question, should I go full time? Should I not go full time? Have you got any advice for those people? Because I know how busy you are. You could have gone full time and you chose not to.
Well, I think I think, Craig, there's a few things to consider there. Number one is, are you out on your own? Do you need to support your family? For me, you know, I was married, and as you know my story, then, you know, I was divorced and I never had kids. So I didn't have that level of financial burden as someone who is raising a family. I always say, you don't know what life throws at you. God's got an incredible, wicked sense of humor. And, you know, like, we never expected COVID to hit. We never expect certain things to hit. So I think that if you're going to make the switch to part-time, to full-time, I think you need to segue into it slowly. I think you need to at least bank aside maybe half a year of salary in case, you know, at the beginning shows don't come your way. And then I think I was talking to you on this in Netflix. I think we talk about like multiple streams of income, right? But in our day, it was just called like, just, you know, finding as many different ways to make money as you can, but they package it in a very nice way. So I think that you've got to be a jack of all trades sometimes, and maybe you can't settle for being master of one. When you do magic as a side income, I think the benefit is that it's not such a slog sometimes. And sometimes you don't have to take the gigs that you really don't fit your style. But as a full-time entertainer, I don't think sometimes you have the luxury of choice. And you just have to take any gig that comes your way in order to make a living. So I think that if you're a generalist of magic, I think that you stand a better chance of making it full-time. I think in the world today, you've got to be very adaptable. We've got entertainers in Hong Kong that basically do everything because they have to, right? So I think that you need to follow your heart in anything that you do. My phrase always is, actually borrowed from my girlfriend, have the passion, take the action, then magic will happen. And I truly do believe that passion is the motivator, but if you don't actually take any action, it's like a book that I read called See You at the Top by a motivational writer called Zig Ziglar. And in there is this saying that a plan has no value until put into action. So you can have all the great plans in the world, but if you don't take the initial step to actually transform that into action, it doesn't mean anything, right?
No.
Yeah. So I hope that's an answer. Anyway, everyone's individual, and it depends on the economy and the country that you live in and the responsibilities that you have to bear. But if it's really in your heart, then I'd say go for it, because you only live once, right?
Perfect. Absolutely. And when it comes to you as a performer, as you've said before, you've done cabaret, you've done restaurants, you've done close-up, but your niche that you've kind of spent most of your time performing in is kids shows.
Yeah.
Any advice on performing in kids shows? I know that, having spoken to you an awful lot, I'd love to get your advice on kids shows, because I think more magicians... Really, I'll be honest with you. I think that, you know, worldwide, we're going into a recession or financial insecurity. And I've always found that kid shows are as close to recession proof as you can get, because it doesn't matter how little money a parent has. They really, really want to try and give their child a special birthday. And while corporate shows might dry up and during hard times and other events might dry up and close-up magicians might struggle, kids magicians always thrive. You know, I set up my business during a big recession, and the point I'm trying to make here is, what advice do you have for people that are watching this that want to get into kids magic? Because you performed kids magic at a very high level for a very long time.
Well, I think, Craig, I do agree with you that no matter how tough recession gets or finances get, you know, parents will always, they won't skimp on their kid. And as I always tell parents when they're struggling with whether to hire me or not, I'm always saying, and they'll say something like, $300 for a kid's party. And I said, no, it's for your kid's party. And that's the difference. I said, you know, childhood is fleeting. And what price do you place on memories, right? And these are the memories that you go back on. You know, the party years are not very long, right? We're looking at maybe from 4 to 5 to about 7, 8 or 9. And after that, they want to just have a couple of mates over, sleep over, and, you know, gone at those, you know, huge parties. So you've actually only got a window of about 4, 5, 6 years max, right? So that's one thing I do agree on. And the advice that I would give is love the kids, not in a pedophilic way, but in a way, yeah, you know, it's like we would love the kids, you know. But what I mean is that you've got to be genuine, because kids can spot a fake a mile away. Now, adults, we have filters, right? We grow up and we learn to be polite. Oh, that's a wonderful trait. Oh, that's marvelous. I'd like to learn to be a magician. And, you know, that kind of thing, right? Even if your act is crap, they're not going to actually say you're crap unless they're drunk, right? But kids will tell you, you suck, bro. I can see that, right? And so they're your harshest critics, but they're the ones who are going to respond the most genuinely to you, right? And if you love them, if you respect them, they're not incomplete beings. You know, they're not half-formed. They're fully formed. Look at Ryland at that age, right? The way he thinks, the way he acts. And so you give them respect. Laugh with the kids, not at them. You know, a lot of magicians treat kids as the butt of their jokes, right? Laugh with them. So for me, it's all about empowerment. When I started doing magic, it was all about me. Look at me. I'm the magician, and I'm Bernardo the Great, and look what I can do. And then I realized that for kids, it came from a lecture by Silly Billy, David Kaye, and he said that actually kids are surrounded by things that are magical. A microwave is magical. A remote control is magical. You can't compete with that, right? So what you have to do is to empower them. And so that was a paradigm shift for me. And after that, all the jokes were on me. The breakaway one was on me. I was this fumbling adult that couldn't make things work properly. And it was up to the kids with the magic words and, you know, wiggling fingers that were able to set things right. And so the show became all about kids. And my USP, my unique selling point came that I'm not the star of the show. Your child is. And my job when I come to the party is to make he or she shine and the magic star shine much brighter. It's not about me. And so I would advise all magicians who branch into kids show magic. Number one, respect the kids. Respect them, laugh with them, not at them. Talk to them as adults. You don't need to baby talk and goo goo gaga them, right? I don't do baby talk with them. And I think another thing is package your tricks so that you entertain the adults at the same time as the kids. The focus isn't the adults, but some of the jokes, some of the hack lines that work on adults that fly over the heads of the kids as well. Because at the end of the day, the adults are the ones that book you. But if you pitch it just as adults, it doesn't work. So I would say, I had a parent come up to me in a show last week and he said, you know, I watched your show 10 years ago and I watched it again. And he said, I still love it. It's like Disney for adults, right? And I think that's great that, and parents derive pleasure from watching their children being entertained. So you don't really have to pitch the magic at the adults. But once in a while, like if you do Cuban bottle or something that the adults realize, whoa, right, this guy can do some hard-hitting stuff. So maybe we should hire him for our corporate show or our 50th birthday as well. But that's not, to me, that's a bonus. The main thing is that, can I make that child's day a really special one? Can I make his star shine? And I think that if you can do that, then the money will come and the bookings will come.
It's amazing.
And I know, can you talk to us a little bit about trick selection in your show? I'm not suggesting you tell us what your tricks are. I know that you've been heavily influenced, again, from speaking to you. I know you've been heavily influenced by people like Mark Leverage in the past.
Yes. Yes, I have. Actually, the show that I perform now is pretty much the same as 20 years ago when I went actually to UK and I met Mark at his home. And I bought this book from him called The Magic Party and the sequel, which is The Magic Party 2. So at that time, it was all comb bound. And of course, he has ebook versions. And it completely changed the way that I thought about magic, that you don't need huge props. Your audience volunteers are the props. And, you know, I don't mean it in a demeaning way. I mean, I'm not like using them, but they're the ones, that's how you feel at the stage. That old adage, pack small, play big. It really does work in the field of children's entertainment. Of course, there are some magicians who still believe that you got to have lots of huge props arranged on the table, but it's not a deal with them. For me, if I can get 5 minutes out of a silver scepter or out of a breakaway wand or a fan, I will milk it for the entertainment value that's worth. I think David Kaye put it best of Silly Billy when he said, it's not the destination, it's the journey that you take the kids. And yeah, the climax of the trick is just that we've reached the terminal, but we had so much fun along the way that it doesn't really matter what happens at the end. But I, of course, also believe that sometimes kids' magic shows, they kind of devolve into like clowny shows, and there's not a lot of magical element. So I keep reminding myself that parents are paying for a magic show at the end of the day. So you need a lot of strong magical elements in the show. It can't just all be laughs and gags and you know, punchlines. It has got to be magic along the way. And so my recommendation for kids' selection, trick selection, is that see how you can adapt adult tricks, classics of magic to kids. I'm working on now the Trevor Duffy diminishing cards, right? Which is basically a trick for adults brought to kids. And Mark Leverage also, a lot of his close-up tricks for adults are reworked with children's presentations. So I think that what I do is I just draw inspiration from lots of different entertainers, Tommy James, David Kaye, David Ginn. David Ginn was like one of my earliest mentors in magic, children's magic. And I still have Professional Magic for Children, which is his seminal text back in the early 80s. Where he lays out his kid show. And basically, I think that any trick would work for kids so long as you slant it to their way of thinking and try to make magic topical. Mm-hmm. So, you know, try to delve into what makes the kids tick. The worst thing as a children's magician you can be is out of touch with the kids. So I always ask the kids when I book a show, I always ask the parents, what's your child's favorite hobby? What's his favorite cartoon character? What's his favorite movie? What's he into? And of course, if they said he's into Rubik's Cube, oh, that's a gift, right? If he's into Lego, I would do something with Lego, just one trick or one effect. You don't have to theme the whole thing. I'm not someone who can theme a whole show, but I can at least work one trick in. So that it fits the theme of the show. And then it seems to the parents that you've created something that's personalized. And I think that that's an important thing in kids shows. So you don't try not to just have a generic show that you just wheel out every single time. I put all my shows onto computer, onto a spreadsheet, so I know exactly, because you're going to get a lot of referrals, right?
Yeah.
And although kids don't mind watching the same thing again, like their favorite cartoon they can watch over and over again, but remember, the adults are watching. And if the show that you're doing is a referral from a show just a couple of months ago and you're doing the same thing, parents would think that's all you have in your locker. Just chop and change it. So the old David Devon saying that I know only 8 tricks, it doesn't really work in the field of magic, in kids show magic. I think you need to have different variations of the same trick.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
So the structure of your show can be the same, but the ingredients, the components that you feed into your show need to be modular. So I have like 3 different shows that I rotate. So like if I go back the next year, I do show number 2. And then if I go back the third year, I go show number 3. And I think after a 3-year cycle, basically you can begin again. Yeah, pretty much.
So do you ever find, if you're doing those shows on a cycle, do you ever find that you get to a point where you're doing a show that you might have done on the first cycle and it's now the fourth cycle and you're going back onto the first show and you completely forget everything that you're meant to be doing and you forget the lines and the bits of business and how to do the tricks, or does it always
kind of... No, of course the first show is probably a little bit rusty. So when I'm starting a new cycle, I always look for... like a colleague or a friend whose kid is having a party, and I just do a freebie, and then it kind of like gets all the rust out, and the kinks out of it, and then it's ready to go again. So I always look for a couple of shows. I know there's this huge debate on Facebook Magic Forums about the effectiveness of doing a free show, but I always say it never hurts. So long as you know why you're doing it and what benefit you can get out of it, it's a win-win situation. And, you know, I'd rather do a charity show, a benefit show, than to be sitting at home, you know, waiting for the phone to ring, you know, because every show will put you into contact with potential audiences, right? Yeah. And sometimes you can be altruistic. You can do something just for the sake of doing something. You don't have to, you know, not everything can be measured in dollars and cents, can it, Craig?
No.
And it's sad. It's sad if you go through life just thinking of it in that way. I think you glean so much from acts of kindness.
Yeah, I completely, totally agree. And how, one more question on the subject of kids' magic. A lot of questions that I get revolve around dealing with older children. And now, do you have any advice on that? Because obviously you've got experience as a cabaret magician, you've got experience with as a close-up magician. I know you do a lot of Henry Harrius effects, who's a friend of yours. And
yeah, it's a good man.
So many magicians really struggle with performing for older children. And it's something that I know that you don't have an issue with at all. Is there any advice on how to approach something like that?
Well, again, I think that the thing is to keep in touch with their world. And I guess because I'm a secondary school English teacher, so I interact with kids of that age group pretty much every day, but of course under a different setting, under an educational setting. But at the same time, I think that the first thing you have to do is to realize that in their world, there is no such thing as real magic. So, you know, you got to put away this idea. And the fact that they can access magic so easily now, you know, through YouTube, through the internet, means that that layer of mystery has pretty much been stripped away. But I think that what you can still do is to, you know, provide them with interesting challenges packaged as magic. You know, it's the effects that you do for the for this age group, I think, cannot be, you know, all the sight gags and stuff, I don't think that they really work. So they got to be intellectually a bit challenging, and something that that suggests a level of dexterity. So I think that, for example, anything with Rubik's Cubes go over wonderfully with that age group, because Rubik's Cube is something that I think keeps coming back, like bad hairstyles, you know, it comes back in cycles, and it's the rage again, right? And then they're also very much into this concept of being able to read minds and being able to tell like the future. So I think mental magic, as opposed to mentalism, works for kids. I do a lot of, there's two books that deal with mind reading for children. It just slips my mind. I have him on my bookshelf. Is it Paul Romani that put out two books on like mind reading for children? Two books, right? And there's a lot of material there. A lot of mentalism stuff works. A lot of stuff with movies work, because you know they're very much into movie cult. I'm not plugging your products, Craig. I'm not going to do it, right? But but it does work. Yeah, it does work. And I think some kind of manual dexterity, as I said. But not like heavy sleight of hand, but just something that shows that there's a level of skill involved, I think will impress.
So we don't have to become Bond Lee.
Oh, no, you no. But I think, and also I think another thing is that you can teach them some magic. So what I do for that age group is after the magic show, I have like a mini workshop where I teach them some tricks. And not all the kids are interested in the tricks, but As I said, it just shows them that the world of magic is actually, it's another kind of skill set, basically. And I think that works for kids, I mean, these teenagers. And I never really have too much problem with them as well. But again, it's to pitch it at their level. not to baby them and not to go too above them. So adult tricks will work pretty well too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So have you ever, one more question about kid magic and about your career in general. Have you ever had any regrets? Have you ever kind of sat there and thought, well, you know, I'm this full-time teacher, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing, but, you know, you see other magicians that have gone full-time and you think, well, I can do that, I can do better than that. Have you ever had regrets, or have you kind of stayed the course and being happy to kind of be in both worlds at the same time?
Well, I think there was a stage, I think we all go through a midlife crisis, right? And there was a stage, I guess, in my 40s where I did feel, oh, should I take the plunge and jump into full-time entertaining? But then, okay, so it's like, somebody asked me, like, what as a teacher, what did I hope to achieve, or what do I hope to achieve? And I said, all I ever wanted to do as a teacher was to make a positive difference in the lives of my students. Mm. And when I was juggling this idea of changing full time into magic, I thought to myself, the impact that I can make on a child. Of course, you can say that there's a potential David Copperfield or Paul Daniels in every audience, right? And you can touch that kid, and perhaps your magic show will be the catalyst to this great entertainer of the future. But it's pretty much a one in a million shot, I think, right? But as a teacher, I think you do touch the lives of children and you do make a positive impact, but maybe not right away. It's kind of like you plant a seed and then you're not really there when it becomes this tree, but you're the one who implanted the seed in them. And I think, I like to think that in the course of 30 years, I've been a teacher 32 years, I think that I've hopefully nurtured a lot of people that have gone on to impact the world. I don't have many heroes in my life, Craig. I'm sorry, you're not at that status yet. You're getting there, okay, but you're not at godlike status. One of my heroes was a very understated lady who lived a very under the radar life. She dedicated her whole life, and even her death was badly timed because it coincided with the death of Lady Diana. So the whole world was consumed with the death of Lady Di in 1997. And at the same time died this woman who to me epitomized service. And her name was Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. And she spent all her lives in the slums of Calcutta, India, serving the poor and the homeless, right? And in her autobiography was this say that I remember to today: very few people can do great things, but we can all do little things in a great way. So I think that as a teacher, I can't find the cure to cancer. I can't, you know, do great things, but I can impact. And it's the ripple effect, right? You know, you drop a pebble and the ripples reverberate, and they extend further than we can even ever imagine. So that was the deciding factor to switching to becoming a full-time, because I had a full calendar of events. I was actually skipping school once in a while just to do shows. I was having three or four shows a day back to back. And I asked myself, what legacy do I want to leave behind, right? And I decided that I can make a more positive impact as a teacher, and I can still spread joy and fun and maybe influence magicians, future generations, by doing kid shows and weekends and holidays. And that's what I decided to do. And I don't think I regret that, but I think that as I move towards, you know, as I sail into the setting sun, I think that I would like to pick up magic again, and I would like to, maybe move into magic more full time. So long as you have the energy and the physical energy and the passion, I think that, you know, age is pretty much a number.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And if anybody shows that and epitomizes that more than anyone else, it's you.
and you, Craig, and what you've done with encouraging and nurturing the career of Rylan, I think it's something that, you know, kudos to you. And, you know, that must be your, you know, your happiest.
Oh, yeah, moment. 100%.
Yeah.
He blows me away every single time I see him perform. He was on stage tonight, you know, because I'm filming this in the early hours of the morning. He was on stage tonight just a few hours ago. And, you know, at 9, he's doing a full 1-hour stage show. You're just on his own, on stage for an hour. Just blows me away every time.
But Craig, I would like to thank you very much for it. Like I said, I'm not really anyone in the magic field. Maybe in Hong Kong, some people know me, but I'm kind of, you know, I'm not really well known. And for you to give me this platform for me to share, you know, the passion that I have for magic. And magic is really a worldwide brethren. There are no divisions, although it may appear that we're divisive, you know, in forums and stuff. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we all are magic lovers and we all have our own different paths and journeys in magic. And so long as we keep it positive and not bash each other down, which I think is just, you know, I don't know if it's the internet and social media that's given us this kind of, you know, this blanket opportunity to just bash and to hurt. And, you know, I always say, as my mom always said, you know, be kind, say kind words. If you can't be kind, then it's best just to, you know, be silent, yeah. Right? And yeah, keep your opinions to yourself. And it's much better to lift up than it is to tear down. But I think we live in a culture where we build people up and then we tear them down, right? And we derive pleasure in tearing down the very people that we built.
Yeah,
up. It's strange, Craig. But anyway, I would again like to thank you for this opportunity to be able to be interviewed and to be on, you know, your channel is to me, you know, a real privilege and an honor.
You absolutely deserve it, Bernard. You really do. As I said to you when I asked you to do it, it's because I want more people to know your story. And I want people to also understand that. And it's why I've asked you so many questions about, you know, juggling magic with a career. There's no shame in having a full-time job and being a magician. There's no shame in that at all. You know, sometimes people, I met a magician a week ago, and he was about 50, and we got talking, and he said, oh, I've failed. I've only, you know, I wanted to be a full-time magician, but I've only ever been a part-time magician my entire life. And I'm like, how many gigs have you done? And he told me, and I said, well, you're doing more gigs than most full-time people. What do you do for a living? And he told me, and I was like, well, think about all the lives that you've touched doing what you do. On top of that, you get a chance to do magic. There's no shame in you know, being part-time. And in fact, I was speaking to Graham Shaw from Magic Box recently, and he said, in his opinion, anybody who goes full-time is nuts, because, you know, he's a magician, a very well-known, well-respected magician, the current Family Entertainer of the Year in the UK, and yet he's got a full-time job as well. I don't think there's any shame in it at all. I really don't.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is that what can you contribute to magic? I'm not talking about in terms of products and stuff, but just to keep magic alive and keep it as a wonderful, family-friendly entertainment that it is, and to, in your way, encourage and nurture the next generation of magicians. And so magic just goes on, and you know, magic rises and falls in waves, right? And right now, I think that we're on the crest of a wave, I think, you know, and it's, although sometimes it feels like magic overload. And I think that we have to sift out. So that's where your reviews come out and your rants come out. And I think that we need to be reminded that there's a lot of, shall we say, not so good stuff out there trying to compete with our money.
Yeah, there is.
Then we also have high quality products like yours, Wolf Magic. We still have like really good quality stuff out there. So magic is a continuing journey. And yeah, I'm not ready to ride off into the sunset right yet. there are things to be done.
That's good. That's good. Well, that was what I was going to ask you. That's going to be the next question, which is, what's next? What is on your magical bucket list that you haven't achieved yet that you want to achieve? Is there anything that, because you've achieved a lot, but is there anything you haven't achieved that you do want to achieve?
Yeah, actually, I was talking to a magician in the Philippines. His name is Chubster Flores, also a children's entertainer. And we want to see if we can put on a maybe a one day or a weekend convention for kids entertainers in maybe in the Philippines. And we can invite some people to come over to lecture, to perform. Because in the Philippines, there, you know, just in Manila alone, there are 10 magic clubs. 10 magic clubs. Wow. And they have lots of different competitions but the bulk of what they do are like family shows, parties, but then there isn't a lot there in terms of you know, they haven't had a lot of like specialized entertainers and like anything run for them. We've been talking about this since pre-COVID times, but you know, COVID's of course put a spanner into things. So yeah, maybe to set up a convention, maybe even could get you and Ryan over there would be nice. Have you ever been to Asia and to Philippines?
No, I haven't, and I would love to go.
Yeah, definitely. It would be interesting. It would open your eyes.
Yeah, I would love to go. I would absolutely 100% love to go. That'd be amazing. And if there's one thing I know about you, is you're one of those people that if you decide you're going to do something, you do it. You don't make excuses.
Yeah, I think sometimes, as I always say, all talk and no action. You know, there's so many people who have these grandiose plans and talk a lot, but at the end of the day, there's no substance. Right, there's nothing there. So, and like I always say, not everything has to be public. I think in the world we live in, we feel the need to put everything out there, but it doesn't have to be until the time is right. And then you can let the world know. But before it's ready, it's like, what's that old formula, Craig? What was it? Expectation plus reality equals frustration.
Right. Yeah.
I've heard so, that. Maybe you need to lower expectations a little bit, embrace reality, and then the level of frustration will drop, maybe.
There you go. Yeah, that's a really good point. That's great.
Yeah, that's on my bucket list. So a kids show, maybe just a weekend or a one day or a weekend convention, that would be nice for Asia. But of course, inviting some headliners from hopefully from the States or from the UK, maybe. I would love Mark Leverage to come over as well. But, you know, he's...
Well, Mark's still going strong.
He's getting his releases now linked with Big Blind Media and stuff, right? The re-release is coming out, you know, Brainstormer and,
More people know about him than ever before.
And Card Shark with his Wild Dice routine and stuff, yeah. He's getting there.
Yeah.
Anyway, Craig, I guess I've taken a lot of your time and you do look
I'm great. Tired. I'm absolutely fantastic. I'm always tired, but this has been an amazing interview. I want to ask you one last question.
Please. And
one question I want to ask you is, if you could give, we've spoken about an awful lot of subjects over the course of this interview, but if you could give anybody that's watching this one piece of advice based on your 60 years on this planet, to do with magic or their career or anything to do with something that you've learned within this industry, what one piece of advice would you give everybody?
It's an interesting question, and it's something I wish you primed me for before the interview. this is really off the cuff, isn't it?
I'm trying to get you completely off the cuff here. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I would say be kind. I would say be kind in everything you do, in every interaction you have with anyone. Always strive to be kind. And I think that kindness will get you everywhere in life.
That's really true.
I know it's not really magic orientated, but I think it encompasses everything. in life. You know, life is all about interactions with people, right? No man is an island, right? What was that from? About a Boy with Hugh Grant. No man is an island. And the most important thing, I think, is our interactions with people. And I think that no matter whether we're doing a kid's show, whether we're dealing with clients or anything, I think be kind and I think try to see things from another point of view. So one of my favorite sayings comes from To Kill a Mockingbird. It was a classic novel written by Harper Lee in 1950s. It was about race relations in the United States. And there's one saying that says, if you really want to know a man, walk a mile in his shoes. Metaphorically, put yourself in the place of others. And we have no right to criticize until we know the backstory of someone. And it's so easy to point fingers and to criticize, but we don't know the journey of that person and we don't know their backstory. So it all goes back to those two words, be kind, be kind.
Wow, that's very, it reminds me of the old saying by Wayne Dobson, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be.
Yes, touche, definitely. I think it is. And there's nothing wrong with being a nice guy. You don't have to be a hard man. You don't have to be, you know, Mr. Macho. You don't have to be, you know, a very aggressive go-getter. Just be a nice person.
Wow. So true. Absolutely 100% so true. I couldn't agree with you more. And yeah, I mean, this has been an amazing interview. It really has. And there's so much more that we could have touched on and there's so much that we haven't touched on. But I hope that everybody who's watched this realizes, you know, there has been some incredible advice. And I meant what I said at the very beginning of this interview, which is I've got to know you a lot over the last 6 months and you are a wonderful person. More importantly, outside of magic, you're a really nice person. You know, you're a great magician. You're a very knowledgeable magician. You've got an incredible collection of magic. And I know that if I asked you to show us on camera, just showing, and every single time I bring up a subject, you've got like 15 different versions of that prop or whatever it is. But outside of your incredible knowledge of magic, you're also a really nice person as well. And I think that if the magic community can learn one thing from you, Bernard, it's to be nice. It's just to be kind. And
it is a privilege, I think, to be able to utilize magic in a way that brings pleasure, happiness, positivity to the world. And I think that we, as magicians, we do have that gift. The gift to entertain and to bring joy to the world in whatever capacity, whether as a closer magician, as an illusionist, as a kids show magician, right? And I think that that's what the world needs is more happiness, more positivity, more joy. So I think if we can do that and eliminate or at least cut down on the negativity, I think that would be a really good thing. But I guess that's asking a lot because human nature sometimes is, you know, the nature of human beings maybe is to be a bit selfish, a bit self-centered. And I think that we just have to remind ourselves that, you know, to look at things from the other person's point of view. And would they like the same thing? I mean, I'm not a deeply religious person, but the old biblical adage of do unto others what you want done unto you, I think it's a good thing. Would you like, if the tables were turned, would you like that, those words to be said to you? Would you like people to treat you that way? If not, then why are you treating people that way? It doesn't make sense to me, right? But again, Craig, thank you for the privilege. I've also gotten to know you over the past 6 months. And you know, you are also a person that lives, breathes magic 24/7, but at the same time has got this incredible vulnerability that makes you human. And when your soul has been hurt, it's very obvious.
I'm not very good at hiding my emotions.
No, we're both people that wear our hearts on our sleeves, right? Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't really. You know, the ability to emote is not something that is gender specific, as we talked about. You know, this idea that heroes don't, big boys don't cry, and you know, we have to be stoic, and we have to be, because we're men, you know, we need to hold it all inside. Don't really believe it. There's no difference in terms of emotional makeup between a man and a woman. And why can we not also emote? Emotion is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of humanity.
Yeah. Completely agree.
And I think that if we don't have emotion, it's hard to have emotional impact in our magic. And it's just a puzzle, isn't it, really? Yeah. A nicely decorated and choreographed puzzle. But do we touch at the heartstrings of our audience? I know it's weird for a children's entertainer to say, but I think that we do. We can affect kids as well in the type of magic that we do.
Yeah.
And to make them think, maybe not in every trick, but in one or two tricks, there's got to be a message. So in every show that I do, I try to include one trick that conveys some kind of positive message. Yeah, it's not necessarily biblical, but it's just, I think, philosophical in a way. But anyway.
No, man. I could talk about this subject for another hour. I really could. I could just talk about this over and over again. I mean, you are 100% correct. And it's something that, not just in magic, it's something that in life you don't see enough of. You know, you see so many people just holding in their emotions. And you don't know
what they're feeling or how they're hurting inside, because they need to maintain this very stoic impression, right? But then why do we really need to? Why can't we be ourselves? So sometimes I feel your angst and I feel your pain, and it comes across as very, very genuine, because, you know, like, yeah, friends have the right to make fun of me, but you don't know me, so what gives you that right?
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, we award certain privileges to our inner circle that aren't the right to everyone. They don't have access to us just because we have a social presence.
Yeah.
It doesn't give them the right to go to those parts of our lives. Right. And I think that you and I, we can take jokes. We love to laugh, and we laugh at ourselves as much as we laugh at others. But yeah, there's a line and there's a barrier, and you haven't earned that right to enter that particular level. So I'm fiercely protective of my inner part as well. And I always say to students, I'm friendly, but I'm not your friend. To be a friend is a relationship. Friendly is an attitude. Yeah. To be a friend, and there are different levels of friendship. Right. So I've taken a lot of time. So I think I'm looking forward to the edit of this and making me appear erudite, making me appear, you know, literate.
This is going to be the easiest edit in the world, Bernard. I'm just going to slap an intro and an outro on this, and that's all it needs, you know. And I just hope that everybody does.
But you're a great interviewer because you listen. And you don't dominate, and that's important. You let the person being interviewed to express their story, and appreciate that. Yeah,
I try. I really do.
Thank you, Craig. Now get some sleep, man. You have nothing for the next hour at least, right?
Okay, I promise. I promise you're going to get some sleep.
Guys, well, it's like people telling me because the doctors say 6 weeks without exercise, right? You got to let the wound heal. It's basically they cut through four layers and they search it, and then they put a mesh over it and covered it. And then I'm not supposed to do anything, but I'm itching to work out. I'm itching to walk. I'm itching to do something. Yeah. So it's really difficult for me to remain inactive. I've got 2 weeks off work and it's driving me insane. So maybe it's time to learn a Rubik's Cube or a Memdeck or something now.
Man, this is the time. This is the time. By the time you finish this, you're going to have 3 Memdecks, 5 Rubik's, you know, you'll be able to solve a Rubik's Cube in 5 seconds. that's it. You can go and have a competition with Henry Harrius and beat him in a cube solving competition.
Crazy. Thank you very much for the opportunity and privilege, Craig. I do appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Salamat po.
I want every single person that's watching this interview to leave a comment down below and let Bernard know what you think. You are easily findable. Where are you on Instagram, Bernard?
I go by the handle Magic Bern. That's one word, M-A-G-I-C-B-E-R-N with a one, numeral one next to it. And I have a website as well, www.bernardomagic.com. And I'm also on YouTube. So yeah, you can find me. Or just type Bloodsport Hussein and you'll find edited versions of me there.
I was watching a video the other day of where are they now?
Oh God, I'm on one of those.
Yeah, you were in there. Yeah, you were in there. It was hilarious.
As a teacher and a magician, I think it blows people's minds that someone who comes, who is a villain, is a kiddies entertainer. It's like a complete alter ego.
Yeah, but a lot of people, you know, they think of you as the villain, but they don't really know, you know, you were just acting.
It's all a show. Yeah, but thank you again, Craig. From the bottom of my heart, I do appreciate this opportunity.
No problem, my friend. Guys, leave a comment down below. Go and connect with Bernard on Instagram and YouTube. This man is a fountain of knowledge. I hope you've picked that up over the last hour. If you've got any questions, I'm sure if you drop a message on Instagram or something.
More than happy.
He's so giving, it's unbelievable. He'd be more than happy to share his wealth of experience with you. So please make sure that you do that. And I'm going to be back again very, very soon with another video and another interview in a week's time. But one more time, Bernard, thank you very much.
Thank you, Craig.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be
magic.
Sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.